Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Well, over these past few weeks in our human condition segment, we've been exploring the critical yet really tough aspect of the human condition, forgiveness. Last week, our resident Open House clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley took us through some interesting examples of people who'd struggled with forgiving others and the way they actually did it. It was based on a model by Everett Worthington, who actually joined us on Open House last year. Conversation well worth catching. Everett Worthington on the podcast page of our Open House community website from last year. Lynn, welcome back.
Thanks for having
me. Great to see you. I'm glad that you've been quoting him. He's so...
Oh, it's amazing.
So insightful. Yeah. Probably worth recalling that model that he came up with for forgiveness.
Yes. Now, Everett Worthington, for those people who can't remember, he's a researcher, but he said that you can't hurt the perpetrator by not forgiving, but you can set yourself free by forgiving.
Yes.
And Worthington's five steps to forgiveness were born of his own struggle to forgive the person who raped and then brutally murdered his aging mother in a most shocking and horrific way. Now, Worthington's REACH acronym helps us to remember the steps that he came up with.
Yeah.
So R-E-A-C-H, REACH. R is recall the hurt, visualize the event or the circumstance. E is to empathize with the perpetrator, so to understand his or her point of view. A is that altruistic gift of forgiveness, and this must be given fairly freely without your own selfish interest. And we talked a little bit last week about taking yourself out of the picture and thinking of their needs. So it's something I tend to try and prompt myself. What do they need?
Not underestimating the challenge that that might be.
Oh, yes. And some of those needs may be also to face the consequences of their action, of
yes.
course. C is to commit yourself to forgive publicly. So tell people that you're going to forgive. And H is to hold on to the forgiveness, like forgive 7 times 70, as the scripture says. Now, each of these steps can be extremely difficult to take, and it may take some time, perhaps a long time to take each one. But as we attempt to do the REACH acronym to be more forgiving, we begin to feel a little bit more motivated, and the peace that comes with that makes us more motivated again.
Got a force of its own.
Yeah. So when we forgive others, there's a sense of a burden being lifted. And when we forgive others, we give up our position as an aggrieved victim and lose the power to induce guilt and the luxury of experiencing and expressing righteous indignation. So we give that up.
Yeah.
And so forgiveness requires us to put aside our own pride and to be humble. And I think there's something noble and majestic and at the same time really humble about someone who can forgive. Those who truly forgive seem to attain a serenity that's deep and rich. And these people who are what we would regard as forgivers, they give a unique and singular gift that's theirs alone to give.
Yes, the more I listen to what you're saying, it seems that forgiveness does take a lot of strength, although we see it in the scriptures and see it time and time again in history, when it does work. Nelson Mandela is a great recent example of that.
Yeah. And repeating a theme that we introduced last week and the week before, forgiveness is not a weakness. It's not about condoning poor behaviour or offences. According to Madston, who's a researcher in this area, it's not about letting someone off the hook or forgetting or giving up or giving in or being soft. Authentic forgiveness is none of those things. To forgive takes great power, and the strengths we can use to help us to be more forgiving include our own self-discipline and self-control, courage, complete compassion and empathy, and a creativity and an open-mindedness to see what the other person needs, and also that perspective taking where you move into someone else's perspective and show kindness and leadership and humility.
That's interesting. Why humility? Explain that a bit more.
A quote from Charles Kearns is that when people do not see beyond their own needs and desires, it becomes difficult for them to practice forgiveness.
Yep.
So they're not if they're not disposed to forgiveness and expect things to go their own way in most encounters, they can be quite egotistical.
Yes.
Now, egotistical people are more likely to perceive transgressions and transgressors in unforgiving ways. Catherine Britton, who is also a brilliant writer in the area of positive psychology, she says, humility means not setting yourself apart from others, not believing yourself specially deserving or endowed. It means being open to new information that contradicts your previous opinions. Humble people are probably less intense about the perception of injury in the first place, and they're much more open to perceiving the other person's point of view.
Yeah.
They may also be likely to think, there but for the grace of God go I. So forgiveness requires strength and humility.
Yeah, and there's great wisdom in every one of us thinking that there but for the grace of God go I. What about showing leadership in forgiveness? I know we're going to talk about this. How can we do that? And kind of what's the fruit of joining those two, leadership and forgiveness?
Okay, now two psychology articles, one's by Charles Kearns and the other by Susan Madston and her colleagues. They emphasise that the benefits gained from practising forgiveness at work are so compelling and persuasive that all good leaders and managers could benefit from creating cultures of forgiveness.
That'd be a good thing, wouldn't it?
Now, forgiving requires the manager to accept responsibility and a challenge in accepting others as human persons with and without their faults and learning to live together without being angry and resentful. Mm. And I like to think of it another way, and that is to accept that the strengths of one another in the workplace. When we have a culture that talks about each other's strengths, it means that areas of weaknesses are overlooked and compensated by other people.
Yes.
So it promotes a team atmosphere. Now, a bit like Paul tells the Corinthians about operating like a body and each part having a strength and a part to play. Now, the nature of the workplace is that there are many perceived annoyances, interpersonal conflict, arguments, disagreements, and mistakes always occur. And it can be hard work to find ways to move beyond those situations in order to work productively together.
Yep.
But when employers practice forgiveness.
Because they're the leaders.
Yes. The benefits at work include a productive interpersonal relationships, a thriving team, job satisfaction and high morale, and employee retention, innovative problem solving, which I think is awesome. If you start bringing a culture of forgiveness, you get innovative problem solving.
Yeah, because the first three you could think, oh, well, that's all fine, you know, productive interpersonal relationships and teamwork. Well, yeah, but I want results.
Yeah.
But that gives results.
It does, because if it means that we're starting to look at mistakes as opportunities rather than terrible things. Anyway, it also means that there's more flexibility and that people face change a bit easier. There's productivity, resilience. Hello, there's that word again.
Yes.
Physical, mental and emotional health exists in those workplaces.
Yeah.
And I think the changes in the workplace that is forgiving is one of a team approach to mistakes rather than a blame and shame approach to mistakes. And we can all do with reminding ourselves that no one is to blame, but everyone is in a system that works together to achieve a solution. And that happens in families as well.
Yes.
Now, forgiveness has been shown to motivate employees to extend acts of conciliation and goodwill towards the offender and overcome social estrangement, which makes the working relationship between individuals much more effective and productive.
Yeah.
Forgiveness is actually a type of problem-solving coping mechanism in that it helps to reconcile parties that are conflicting and it helps to salvage the social relationships.
Of course they get on. And get over it and get on.
That's right.
Yes.
So because when resentment and other negative feelings are there, it's really hard to maintain the job performance, let alone improvement. So if we reflect on the story in the Bible about the manager who forgave the worker for the money he owed to him, but the worker's response was then to hit up the people who owed him.
Yes.
We can see a little bit of how he lost his position in that.
Yep.
What the manager was trying to do was to influence a cultural shift of forgiveness in the worker and beyond, but unfortunately the worker had a reaction, perhaps by guilt or fear, which was fostered in his blame and shame approach. And he was out to make others pay for him getting caught out, even though he had himself been forgiven.
Okay, so that's forgiveness in the workplace. I am bound to say that I think for a lot of people, the workplace is getting very much tougher. And this is not just off the back of work choices, although I think that had a lot to answer for.
Hmm.
but it's still possible to do this.
I wonder.
Even in a hard employment situation.
Yeah, I wonder too whether the reason the workplace is getting tougher is because we're there longer.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
You know, we've got much longer working hours, and if you look at the latest stats, I think we've gone from 40 to 70 hours a week working.
And when we're there, it's much more intense.
That's right. Days. And we also have much more open plan working spaces.
Yes.
So we're in offices next to people, in a closer vicinity.
Yeah, it's a good point. So that's at work. How does forgiveness, perhaps leadership as well, work in families? That'd be an interesting.
Yeah, leadership and forgiveness is very key in families. How an adult responds to and forgives a child or an adolescent has lasting consequences for us all.
Yeah.
A constructive style of responding can foster self-forgiveness and learning in a young person, while if you have a reactionary style, it can foster guilt and shame and avoidance.
Yeah.
Now, when a young person has violated the rights of an adult, there's an interesting phenomena that happens. The fear, shame, and guilt associated with a young person who asks a significant adult for forgiveness sometimes provides the motivation to prevent a similar transgression from happening again. By taking action of your own part, it sometimes helps you actually make a point of healing and change.
I'm sure that's true. You can imagine the power of someone who's of a lesser order down the food chain forgiving someone higher up, especially in a family.
But also, sometimes even a heartfelt apology to the parent or teacher followed by an adult forgiveness can also result in a lingering case of lack of forgiveness by the child. So the self-forgiveness of the child.
Yes.
So, and this can sometimes happen, you know, it goes into a next lot of relationships. And I think sometimes this is what we talk about when we talk about emotional blackmail that a parent may use.
Mm.
So think about the times when each of us have done something wrong that we know to other people. Have we forgiven ourselves for it, or do we hear that voice in ourselves that we'll never let it go?
Yeah.
Or we go over and over about how bad that was from us, our point of view, and we just don't want to go into another relationship at that depth again because we can't trust ourselves, not because we can't trust another. And here we go back to the notion of being vulnerable.
Yes.
If we are, in order to grow and to change, we need to be vulnerable to the point of making mistakes and allowing others and ourselves to forgive us for those mistakes.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more beautiful than two people with a friendship that is deep enough that they can share their fears, their mistakes, their flaws with each other, and they can love each other beyond those flaws. And that's truly loving them like Jesus does.
I was just thinking exactly the same. Yes, it is.
It'd be really lovely if we could see more of that in our own families.
Yep.
And quite often we do. And we know that families who go through crises together are often closer because of the adversities. Is that because they're more vulnerable in each other's presence? I often wonder about that.
And yet again, and we frequently make this point, this is not the easiest road. This is the harder option, actually.
No, and I go back to Henry Nguyen's comment.
Yeah.
The sign of success in a person's life, at the end of your life, if you're able to say you are vulnerable, that's awesome because that means you've been hurt, you've made mistakes, and yet you have gone in again with your arms open and taken on another relationship, another love, been able to love and show people your flaws and not be so scared and fearful. That's vulnerability, isn't it?
It's a great perspective. Those of us who live and die by ratings know what it's like to be vulnerable. Okay, so that's families and leadership. Next week, this is a really critical issue of forgiving ourselves. Just give us a brief sketch. We're going to take us.
Well, how can we foster the forgiving in ourselves, in young people and other people around us? And, you know, I think it gives us a difference in how we respond with our own emotions.
Yes.
And I think that as a parent and a teacher or any in leadership, how you respond so that you help others to face their consequences versus the response that is like an emotional dumping on someone or a blackmail. You know, we've got to be aware of that difference.
Yep.
And I thought we should also touch on some really challenging situations where forgiveness is used when the transgressor does not want anything to do with it, or they think that they're right and that you're wrong.
Yep.
How do we love them like Jesus then?
Yeah. And I must say, on our special Easter Sunday night, we've got a cracker of a night planned for Easter Sunday. We're delving into real-life situations in the Bible to see where forgiveness and how that actually plays out in the biblical
narrative. It's a bit of an exciting one, that
one. Yeah, it'd be a great night, actually. Lynn Worsley, for now, thank you so much. See you next week.
Thanks, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.